This audio is brought to you by motherswhowork.co.uk, the resource for working mums, business mums, and stay-at-home mums. So, welcome to the Mothers Who Work podcast. My name is Joycelyn Akufo. I'm the founder and editor of Mothers Who Work. So today I'm joined by Heidi Allen from Neighbour, a financial services provider. Hi, Heidi.
Good morning.
Oh, so today we will be talking about how couples can budget without fighting. But I want to introduce you fully to our listeners. So could you just tell us a bit about, you know, who you are and what Neighbour is, what it provides and so on?
Yes, of course. So hello, everybody. My name is Heidi Allen. I'm head of employee wellbeing at Neighbour. And as Jocelyn mentioned, we're a financial wellbeing organisation. We have a very simple mission right at our heart, and that is to help UK employees be better with their money. We do that in a number of different ways. That's through providing education to help people understand how money works, understand how they can have a better relationship with money, and just understand some of the jargon that they might be presented with throughout their life. And we also offer a range of products to help encourage people to take control of their financial situation and to ultimately turn them from a borrowing culture through needs and wants and desires into more of a savings culture to help them obtain their dreams and their goals and actually turn those into reality for them at some point in their future lives.
Right. So do you work with, like, through the employer, or can, let's just say, a working mum who's listening to this, who, you know, connects with that whole, okay, borrowing culture and thinks, actually, I could do with some help that way, would she be able to contact a Neighbour directly?
So typically, at the moment, we work through the employer. So the first port of call would be to have a word with your HR area to see if you have Neighbour available to you. But we're also really excited. We're going to be doing some community-based initiatives in the coming months, which will be sort of more on a community level rather than through the organisations and through employers. So there will be opportunities in the future whereby you'll be able to engage with Neighbour in your local area if it's not something that's available to them through their workplace. So watch this space on that one.
Oh, that's lovely to hear, actually. Yeah, that'd be really good, actually. Oh, thank you for that intro. And it sounds like a really valuable resource. So as you can hear, Heidi is definitely well positioned then to help us with this elephant in the room, which is budgeting and the impact that money has on relationships, marriages. You know, according to many surveys over the years, money problems are pitted as one of the main causes of divorce, often ahead of other issues like infidelity, for example. And I was looking at some data from the Office of National Statistics, which showed that 107,000 heterosexual couples divorced in 2016, up by 5.8% from the previous year. And a poll of 2,000 British adults found that money worries are top of the list of reasons why married couples split up, you know. It's one of the biggest issues that causes marital strife for one in five couples. More than a third say that financial pressures are the biggest challenge in their marriage. A fifth say that most arguments, rather, are caused by money, and that some partners worry about their other halves overspending or failing to budget properly. So it's quite clear that money is almost central to a lot of issues at home. So how can we budget within a couple without fighting? I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been here before.
I'm sure they have.
Any tips for us, Heidi?
Yeah, so I think if we take it a step back and we think about why money might be an issue and why it causes problems, that might help people to actually be able to understand sort of the root cause of some of those relationship breakdowns. I'm really lucky that one of the elements of my role is actually undertaking research into this very topic. So understanding how people feel about their own personal financial situation, mm-hmm. and if they're worried or they're stressed about something, how that impacts their ability to have normal day-to-day relationships, perform normally as they would in the workplace, and what other impacts that has not only on themselves, but also those around them. So their other halves, their family members and their children as well. And that research is just over 10,000 UK employees, so quite a substantial piece of research. And we've seen that more than 6 in 10, so 63% of those that we asked have been affected by financial concerns in the previous 12 months. Now, yes, that figure's really high, but it's really important to understand actually how does that impact us? So if you think about somebody's overall well-being, there are three core elements that make up how we feel in ourselves. Mm. There's physical well-being, so how physically well we feel. We've all been in situations where we felt a little bit under the weather. Maybe we haven't slept particularly well in an evening, or we've got a cold, or there's something not quite right. That has a knock-on impact to your mentality, to your feeling when you get up in the morning, and you're not firing on all cylinders as you would normally be. The same can be said with financial health. And the third element, which I'm sure all of your listeners will be very familiar with, is the mental health aspect. Now, when something's not quite right in one of those areas, be it physical, mental or financial health, it does have a knock-on impact to how we feel overall. And it is a spiral effect. Mm. So if we've got money issues, that affects our confidence, our self-esteem, which impacts our mental health because we're not feeling like we're providing as we should, or we're adding as much value, or maybe we're not keeping up with our social group in the same way because we simply can't afford to. Then you bring in the stress and the anxiety that brings. And then you bring that round into finances, because that then impacts our ability to perform as we should, to be able to earn the money. It also impacts our ability to make rational decisions when it comes to spending, and our ability to maintain our normal spending habits, be they positive ones or maybe not so positive. And then that then comes full circle back round, making us sort of lose sleep, which then again impacts our mental health. So what we need to do is actually recognise when something isn't quite going as we should, as we want it to be, and actually take steps to turn that from a downward spiral into an upward spiral. And that's the reason why a lot of people tend to find themselves in a situation where maybe they might notice a partner not spending in the way that they would like them to, or maybe they're a bit more frivolous than they would have been beforehand. And then rather than understanding, thinking something's going on here, there's obviously a reason why they're doing that, and there's a reason why they're feeling the way that they are. Without that lack of understanding and that lack of awareness of those bigger issues, people would just look at that situation and think, we're supposed to be saving for whatever our goal is, be it, let's say, getting on the property ladder or a house move or starting a family, for example.
Yes.
If somebody's not fully bought into that and they're maybe not feeling as confident, or maybe they're feeling like they're not able to be an equal part in that relationship for whatever reason, then that is going to impact their commitment to achieving that goal. And that's where we do start to see a lot of relationships break down. One of the biggest things in terms of tips that I could suggest would be, it needs to be open and clear communication. You both need to be on the same page when it comes to whatever those goals are that you want to achieve as a couple. Be open and honest and talk about it. And a lot of families, because obviously I talk to a lot of employees, a lot of families, the budget side falls to one person in that relationship. It's either the husband tends to take care of it and the wife doesn't really know what's going on, or the wife would take care of it and the husband doesn't necessarily know what's going on. When you've got a household budget, you both need to take accountability. Now, there could be ways that you could split that. If one of you is weekly paid and one of you is monthly paid, for example, then you both take responsibility for one element of that. Or if you just have sort of one level of income that's coming in, you both need to know what's coming into the house. You both need to know what's going out of the house. And you both need to know what those budget restraints are on your household income. Does that make sense?
It definitely does. And I think what you said would resonate with a lot of our listeners. You know, you often hear couples talking about how one is the saver and the other's the spender, you know, that type of thing. What do you do when maybe if you're the spender, you think that actually your partner's a bit on the tight side, a bit frugal, whereas they think that you're a splurger who's sort of ruining or spending all the life savings of the couple?
Yeah, I mean, again, technology is a great thing in some respects, but it's also a hindrance in others. So again, if you take that spending ethos, it's far too easy nowadays for people to go into a shop and to just tap their debit card or to tap their mobile phone to actually pay for an item. When we were younger, when I was younger, we didn't have those technologies. So it actually made it a more conscious decision to spend. So we would go into a shop, we might have 10, 15, 20 pounds in our pocket. If we saw two things that we wanted, we would automatically do a quick wants versus needs, sort of subconsciously, in terms of, well, I can't afford to get both of those things, so which one am I going to benefit from more? And you would pick the thing that you would get the greatest value from or have the greatest need for. People don't do that so much nowadays because it's very easy to think, well, actually, I could do with both of them. So I'll just tap and I'll just buy both. I do that with my daughter all the time when we go shopping. But technology can also help. There are things out there, I don't know if you've come across things like the BPAY band, which is provided by Barclays. You don't have to be a Barclays customer to use them. And they're basically either a little fob that you can put on your mobile phone or on your keys, or you can get like little wristbands. And it basically works in the same way that a contactless debit card would work. But the difference is you have to preload money onto that band. So from a security perspective, especially if any of your listeners like me have got elderly parents or younger children, it's a really great way of being able to give them the responsibility of being able to go out shopping, knowing that they've got money, but actually also limit how much they can spend, because you could put £20 on or you could put £50 on, knowing that that's your spending for the week. And you can track it all on your mobile phone as well, so you can see your spending habits, but you can't go over what's on your wristband. And actually, from a safety perspective, my mum has arthritis and really badly, so she can't handle the new notes or the small coins. So when she goes into a shop, she actually stopped going shopping for a while because she felt vulnerable having to try and get her purse out of her bag. And then she would pass her purse over to the cashier to get the money out for her because she couldn't get the slippery notes out. So actually what we did was we got her the BPAY band. So she just pops them on her wrist, takes away all of that vulnerability that she was feeling in terms of having to get her purse out and hand it over to somebody. And now she can just go into a shop. She hasn't even got to get out of her mobility chair. She can literally just tap her wrist on the contactless, and that's given her back control. Mm-hmm. So whether you've got children or you've got parents or there's somebody with a disability in your family or somebody who needs a bit of help when it comes to budgeting, things like that can really make a big difference. And it's quite trendy as well to go up to something and just tap your wrist and people say, oh, what's that? I've had lots of conversations with people in shops saying, oh, what's that? How does that work? They're really great.
Did you say it's called the BPAY band?
BPAY band. So
okay, I'll look for
BPAY.com.
Okay, all right then. See, it's always good to have these conversations. Many of us don't necessarily like talking about money, but then you learn something, don't you?
No.
That's it. And that's quite good even for young people as well, you know, like children, older ones. You're sort of trying to train them up in money management, sensible spending and all of that. So that sounds perfect. It really does. BPAY band. All right, so I'll look for that and put that on. No, that's awesome.
Perfect.
No, that's awesome. So, I mean, you hit a very valid point there about dealing with the inherent issue, you know, not just looking at the spending, but are there other maybe emotional factors that are causing the overspend? And what do you do from that point on, you know, because I guess it also depends on that person's willingness to even have that conversation, if that makes sense, you know, or recognition of the problem. Another school of thought is that couples should maybe consider having separate bank accounts, having one joint account that manages the you know, household spending. All the bills come out of that account, and then they each have their own separate bank accounts where the remainder of their money goes into, and then they can do as they wish, you know, whether they're saving it, spending it, whatever, you know, then it doesn't impact on the marriage in the same way. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's a really interesting question, and I can kind of give pros and cons for both, to be honest. I mean, the benefits of having joint accounts is joint visibility, is joint accountability, and it kind of forces you to have those conversations if somebody isn't being fair in the way that they're treating them in their money. So I think if you've got a relationship where you've been with somebody for quite some time and you're comfortable to have those conversations, which, as you say, not everybody is, then I think the joint account thing works really well, especially if you've got common goals. If you have two people saving into a pot, there's an element of accountability there to make sure that you're both moving forward to achieve whatever goal it is that you've set yourselves. But that said, I can also see benefits of having separate pots, because obviously one person's spending habits may not be truly reflective of the other person's spending habits. Whereas the danger with that is you lose sight and you lose accountability, and the person who's maybe slightly more frivolous or slightly more sort of free with their money might think, brilliant, he or she doesn't know what's going on with my account. So actually, if I go to the end of my overdraft, or I take out a loan over here, or I take out a credit card and I max it out, that the other person isn't going to know. So I think there is an element of giving an element of secrecy and giving those who maybe aren't well constrained the opportunity to probably even go further in terms of their reckless spending can be quite dangerous. The other side of the coin is when we think about credit scores.
Yes.
So if you've got a couple who are living together, they've created a joint financial relationship, and that joint financial relationship then is reflected in each of those parties' credit scores. Now, if one of those parties goes off and runs up massive amounts of debt, is reckless with their spending, maybe they're late with their credit card payments and those sorts of things, whilst it doesn't affect the more sensible person's credit score directly, it could have an impact on a lender's decision to lend to the more sensible one or the couple in general, because they will take a view to think, well, we've got a sensible person here, we've got a reckless person here. It would be very easy for the reckless behaviour to rub off on the sensible behaviour. Likewise, the sensible behaviour could rub off on the reckless behaviour. So a provider, if they're on the fence in terms of do we lend or don't we lend, that relationship with the person who's got that reckless behaviour can have an impact on the lending decision. So it's very much a case of, it brings us back to having those open conversations and trying to work together to find the way that you can move forward. Now, if you said to somebody who is more free with their money and is more live for today ethos, right, that's it, I don't want you to spend, we need to stop, we need to save every penny. Yes. Chances are that's not going to work because that's going to be too far a jump. So what I would suggest is actually break it down into smaller chunks. And this works when you've got savings goals as well. If you think you want to get on the property ladder and you need to save £30,000 for your deposit and your legal fees, for example, if you're sat there at the beginning of that journey thinking, Christ, I've got to get to 30 grand, it's too far away, it's too unachievable. Whereas if you break it down and you say, right, we need £1,000 to cover legal expenses, let's hit that milestone first and we'll worry about the rest after. Then we need £500 to cover this particular expense. When you get to that milestone, you say, right, now we need to get to £5,000 and that's going to cover this, that and the other. And set yourself smaller, achievable goals. They're far more motivational and far easier to get to than giving yourself that big 30,000 millstone around your neck. The same can be said for the spending. So if somebody's used to spending, I don't know, £100 a week, as an example, on nothing, and they've got nothing to show for it at the end, if you say to that individual, right, I don't want you to spend, for the whole of this week, or you can only spend £20, the chances are it's going to be like jumping in an ice cold bar full of ice cubes. That it's too much of a shock to the system. So we have a great tip that might help there. It's called the 5-2 diet. So you've probably seen it, obviously, January, New Year's resolutions, etc. Yeah. It's about living normally for 5 days and fasting for 2 days. And the same can be done with your finances. Mm-hmm. So you could say to that person, right, on a Monday and a Tuesday, spend as normal. Day 3, Wednesday, I want you to only spend £10. Mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, spend as normal. Saturday, that's going to be our fast day. We're going to be really good. Sunday, spend as normal. Because you're only doing it for those 2 days out of the week, it actually is a lot easier for people to digest. And once they've got used to that and they start to see the changes, they start to see the money that they're saving, put it into a jar, a visible jar that they can see, and they can start to see that building up. It's then easy to flip the 5-2 to be 5 days good, 2 days normal, and actually reverse it. So there are lots of ways where you don't have to think it's a really big conversation, I'm absolutely dreading, how are we going to get past this?
Yes.
Break it down into smaller chunks. Don't set yourself big, huge milestones that you're going to struggle to achieve. Mm. And have the conversation. Motivate each other to be better with your finances.
No, that's definitely a good way forward. I like the 5-2 because you're almost just sort of retraining yourself, you know, to find that balance, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you can't do it for 2 days out of 5, you know, then that in itself hopefully would trigger something in the spender to say, actually, I need to look into this because it's a bigger issue. What is stopping me?
Yeah.
Those tips are amazing, honestly. So it sounds like you don't really advocate the separate banks as such.
I just think for some couples, it works really well. If both couples can be both elements of the couple can be disciplined enough to be able to do it, then that's absolutely great. But where the difficulty comes is where the couples aren't equal, where you've got somebody who's earning significantly more or significantly less than the other person. It can prove challenging. Likewise, if you've got somebody who has a completely different outlook on their spending and actually the accountability is helpful for that individual, then I think it can be difficult. But if you've got two people who are equally motivated and are broadly in line with each other when it comes to their attitudes to spending and saving, then I think it can work absolutely fine. But every couple is different and every family is different. It's about recognizing what works for you and doing the best for the way that you and your partner interact with each other.
That's it. And keeping those communication channels open, even in,
yeah,
no matter how difficult it's
definitely
that's it. So you've given us so many tips and really good tools to use to make those often difficult conversations a lot easier, you know. So thank you so much for that, Heidi.
You are more than welcome.
Any last closing words before we wrap up the podcast?
I would just say don't be scared about money. Don't be scared to admit that you've made bad decisions in the past. Just like with any element of your overall health, be it your physical health, your mental health, or your financial health, things do go wrong every now and again, and that's okay. The difficult or the positive is actually recognizing when things aren't maybe going quite according to plan and getting the help that you need, whether that's a loved one, family member, a professional person. Just don't bury your head in the sand. As soon as you can address any issues or any sort of feeling of vulnerability or lack of control, the sooner you can address those issues, the easier it is for you to get out of it.
Yes, that's it. No, that's awesome. That's really, really helpful. Thank you so much, Heidi. And
it's been a pleasure.
For the listeners, I'll say, you know, obviously speak to your HR about the NUBA. Look out in the community as well. Could be coming to a neighbourhood near you. Then, you know, that band that you mentioned, I would definitely root that out and put it on the website. And something that I personally, I think I can just see myself using it, giving it to our son who turned 14 today, you know. So it's
happy birthday.
It's something for the whole community, a whole family, as it were. So thank you very much for that, and thank you for your time.
That's okay. More than welcome.
You are listening to a podcast brought to you by motherswhowork.co.uk. Be sure to visit the website for more tips and advice on being a successful working mum.